This is 4:55 on Wednesday, October 19th.
Oh yeah, use all of our laps. Use all the timers though. They don't even have to like
the timer folder.
Yeah. Just copy paste all of them. Okay. Well, just like download all of it.
Yeah.
And then like page 276 per book. You copy all of them.
Okay, good morning. I have no internet here this morning.
You may not either. Pardon? You do. You're able to actually connect to links and all that stuff.
You don't. I have a link layer connection successful, but I.
It says no internet access, and that means no access to.
I can get on too.
What? And it's not working on my wired or on my wireless.
Have you tried restarting the computer?
Well, that seems like the next thing to try, doesn't it? It's very weird. I mean, I could try that. Yeah.
Risk it. They might force an update on you.
What's that?
You open up, check it out. It's built off of the IT config. It has to push your DNS and then release and renew
it. All right. I love it. Where is it? Here it is.
But I have to use those.
So I got oh, 169.254. Those are. Are those link local? Or those automatically generated?
My laptop gives me 169 when it can't get an IP.
Right. That's what it seems to be. Alright. Okay, we're going to take a little pause here. I really would like to have the network this morning because I want to talk about the. I want to talk about the project, and we can't even see the project. If I don't see that. So it won't let me restart without doing updates. So.
Oh yeah, that's a thing now.
All right. Well, we may be at this for a while. Okay. So, we will. Do audio recording for the time being only, and see what happens. So our goal today is to talk about the distance vector algorithm. It would be much easier if we had the pictures, and to talk about the assignment. And the assignment is to implement. Essentially implement the distance vector algorithm on a bunch of processes running on the computer and talk to that stuff. So let's deal with the logistics of the project while that's doing its thing. tell me when it. Okay, so once again, we will do this project as. Either an individual or a two-person team project, please. I think that is. I think that having somebody to talk about with this project is very useful. So if you can find a compatible partner, then I think it would be valuable to do that. You have about almost 4 weeks to do this project. I'm assigning it today and. It's 4 weeks from this past Monday. This is not a project that you could do by leaving it to the last week. I won't even say the last 3 days. You can't do it by saving it for the last week. You need to get going on it. There are several new things in it that you have not encountered before, and so each of them is a potential sticking point. So the first one is the use of datagram sockets instead of stream sockets, and using the using the receive from primitive instead of the received primitive to get your messages. Now, what's the difference between receive and receive from? Receive from gets you the message, and it also tells you who the message was from. Okay? And you're going to need to be able to get that information in order to figure out how to update the data structures in the router. That would be part of it. Okay? So that's one new thing. The second new thing is the use of the select primitive to allow you to determine which of several file descriptors or socket descriptors is ready to perform I/O. So remember we talked before about how if you do a receive on a socket descriptor, that will block process till there's some data available. We saw this already in project one. The process does receive, it blocks, and then sometime later the message arrives and you get the data. So in this project, you're going to be using two sockets simultaneously to drive the behavior of the router. And if you just do a receive on one of them, what's going to happen? Any messages arriving on you sit there and not be processed until the first one succeeds, and that's not what we want. So the way around that in socket programming is a primitive called select, or another primitive called poll. We're going to be using select. A primitive called select that you hand a set of socket descriptors or file descriptors to, and it tells you, but wrong system.
Okay. So stopping. Let me finish the sentence before I
go off. So you hand them out set of file descriptors to select, and it sometime later comes back and tells you which one of those is ready, or which ones of those is ready to do I/O, so that when you do a receive on them, it does not block. Right? So that's select. And select is sort of mechanically tricky to use correctly. It's not complicated in any sense. It's just got some funny rules about it that people had tripped over. So even just setting out to do a little exercise using select first in the early part would be a good thing. Okay, so there are those two things. And then the third thing is the distance vector algorithm itself. And we're going to talk about it today, and we'll see that it doesn't seem all that complicated, but then realize that I spent a good part of yesterday afternoon trying to do my implementation of this thing, and got it wrong several times. It's one of those things. It's got little gotchas in it sort of throughout. And so if you don't get it right, it won't work right, and then you'll be disappointed. So all of that is a plea to please get started on this soon. The other good thing about getting started soon is that the lectures about distance vector will be fresh in your mind at that point, and that would be a good thing too. Okay, well, let me see if I can make this thing work now. Next problem is that this how long Windows is going to take to install the updates after I boot into Windows.
Should have booted automatically on Windows, you'd think.
since it was updating.
Hmm?
Since it was updating, like it should keep updating, right? Not go to.
No, that's not something that Windows has any control over, of whether it boots to Linux or Windows. That's my fault.
Do you have Grub bootloader?
Yeah. And I have it set to default boot to Linux, and I should set it to default boot to the last thing that was booted.
You can do that.
Yeah. No. Yeah, you can. You have to do a little. I have to do a little research every time I want to do it, but it is possible, and I have done it before. Well, it seems happier now, maybe? Yes, on the wired network. So, let's... Hello. I rebooted, and it now seems to be okay. Thank you. All right, so here we are, 10 minutes into the class and restarting on the recording just for reference purposes. And this. Getting there.
89.
All right, 89. Okay. All right. So, now having filled up 10 minutes of talking about logistical stuff, we can talk about the real stuff, and then we'll get back to the project. Okay, so the distance vector algorithm is based on this idea that every router maintains a so-called distance vector for all of its neighbor routers. So its neighbor routers are the ones that can get to and whatnot. Okay? So rather than having a picture of the entire network, it just has a picture of itself and what its neighbors think. Okay? And in addition, of course, to knowing that information from its neighbors, it knows the cost of getting to each of its neighbors. And so from that, you can say, well, the way that I get to some arbitrary node is I find among my neighbors the one where the combination of getting to that neighbor plus getting to from that neighbor to the arbitrary destination is smallest. Okay. And that will be my best route to that arbitrary destination. And so we're going to look into this. There's one other thing to say about this. Well, look, whatever it was, it will either come back to me or not be important. Okay, so this is what's called a distributed algorithm, in the sense that we start out in a state where all we know about is our local neighborhood, and then we start sharing that information about our neighborhood with our neighbors, and as they learn about it, they learn about our neighborhood and their other neighbors. We ultimately collect enough distance vectors, and they get good enough that we can actually compute the optimal route. And the timing of those updates, that is, when do we send information to our neighbors, is governed by two things. One is when we learn something that sort of makes a change to our own routing table, we tell our neighbors about it.
And then typically, we also tell our neighbors about our routing table every 10 seconds, 30 seconds, once a minute. This sort of gets, this repairs problems that occur when messages are lost. Remember, we're using UDP. And so if a message gets lost, there's nothing to recover from it unless we have some mechanism at the application layer, which in this case is the router itself, to sort of refresh information. And so we get updates when things change, and we also periodically send updates. And when we do that, when we get one of those new estimates, we sort of check to see if things have changed, and we update our own tables, and if the tables change, then we tell our neighbors about it. So that's all pretty abstract. So the code in each node is wait for something to happen, either a local link cost change or a message from a neighbor, recompute our estimates, and if anything has changed, notify our neighbors, otherwise go back to sleeping. And I would add here, we'll wait for a change or a timeout.
Mandatory refresher. All right, so here's a very simple example.
Now notice that each router here, in this example, is going to have information about every other router, right? Because it's fully connected, right? When we get to bigger networks, that won't be the case. You only keep information about a routing table, which is what's the first hop to every destination and the cost of getting to that destination, and you keep the so-called distance vectors for your neighbors. Everybody's a neighbor of everybody else here. So, how do we start out? Time, just to violate all previous conventions in this class, time is now progressing across the screen instead of down the screen. Time is progressing across the screen. So we start out in this first column. Everybody knows only about their local neighborhood, right? X knows about paths to Y and Z, but knows nothing about what Y and Z think. Similarly, Y knows about its neighborhood, Z knows about its neighborhood. And so typically what will happen is now a timeout occurs, everybody tells everybody what they know. And so X learns this information and this information and sticks its distance vectors for its neighbors and now has to recompute its own distance vector and also forwarding information. So let's see what it does. Somebody want to tell me what it's going to enter for Y at this stage? It's going to keep 2, right? Because the cost of getting to Y from X itself is 2, and that's not better than what it can do by either going first to Z, which would be 7, and then to Y, which would give you an 8 for that. So it will keep the 2. And so on for Z. For Z, what happens? Now we have information that we can go, if we go to Y first, then that will cost us the 2, and we can add the 1, that will get us 3, and that will be a better route. So this will say 3, 2, I hope.
Yeah.
So in those first three tables, every node is reachable from every other node, so why are they infinity?
Because this is what Y thinks itself about its neighborhood. It's its own row. As far as it knows, Z and X have no paths. It doesn't know this yet. It's in the process of learning it.
Oh.
Okay? This is just Y's picture of what X knows. Y's picture of what Z knows.
Oh.
Okay?
So when they're combined, then it knows.
Once we get all that information, then we'll know. Right. Okay? So that we just did these two computations. They are now confirmed.
Let's see what happens.
You see, this gets really messy to look at. And it's almost easier to think about it as the algorithm and just write the algorithm and be done with it. But notice that at time two, time one, then this is now Y's picture of what X knows, and this becomes Y's picture of what Z knows, and so on at Z. Okay? And apparently what they're claiming is that at Y, when we update Y's own entry based on this additional information, nothing changes. So it, notice how it's silent in this next time interval, but X, since a change happened, goes ahead and sends out its information again to the neighbors. And similarly, Z, a change happens, so it sends out its information. Okay? And we just keep doing this. And as I said, the amazing thing is that if you just keep doing this, you end up with enough information to compute optimal routes everywhere. So the other thing that can happen, besides the fact that you learn information from a neighbor, is that you may learn that the cost of one of your directly attached links has changed. Maybe it went away. Maybe it got slower. Maybe it got overloaded. Something causes this change, and then the algorithm has to rerun the calculations based on what it knows about its neighbors. Things will likely change in its own distance vector table, distance vector at that point, and it will send that out to the neighbors, and maybe they change too. So in this case, cost there is a different set of initial weights than we had before. The cost goes down, and you sort of have to draw that out to see, draw out those tables to see what that's going to look like. But the point is that when the cost goes down, this algorithm actually works very fast. Right? That will work fine. But if a cost goes up, it turns out that this algorithm can take a long time to propagate that information, especially if the link goes away entirely. It's called the count to infinity problem, because essentially what happens is that different routers believe each other have routes and that are low cost, and they keep trying them out. They keep propagating this information, and this 60 takes a long time to sort of get into the picture. So we're going to see an example of what that looks like using my implementation of the project here in a second. So there's a technique called Poisson reverse that can be used to avoid this count to infinity problem in some cases. Not all cases, but in some it helps. And we'll see. I don't want to talk about it. I want you to figure it out in the course of doing the project. That's the goal here. So it's described in the book, and we will sort of
iterate on it as you get more into the project to figure out ways to reverse. I don't think if I talk about it now, it's going to help so much. But basically, what it says is that if a router believes that it's supposed to send its messages to another router. Let's see if I can get this right. Yeah, if a router believes that its best route to another a particular destination is through a particular other router, it won't tell that other router its belief about getting to that other destination. Right? It just holds that private and doesn't send it onward, and that turns out to be helpful. Okay. All right. So let's look then at really needed the network this morning. So we're going to do this. Sure, be nice if they made it easier to do this, but oh, and you can't see that anyway. Next thing. Oh, and the other thing that helped was to make this font bold, as I believe. Everybody see that okay? Okay. All right, so let's see. CD, CS 455. Okay, so CTI here stands for, it's a particular network. I'll tell you what it's like in a second. It stands for count to infinity, $R ampersand. Okay, so what this CTI network is a ring. It's got A, B, C, D, and E routers all connected in a ring. A to B, B to C, C to D, and so forth. And notice how when things start up, let's say Control S. Hopefully that will keep it from scrolling off. When things start up, everybody knows only about their neighbors, and then the first timeout happens, and A tells its neighbors, which happen to be B and E, that it has a route to the other one, because they didn't know about that. And as a result of that, B and E learn that they can get to each other through A. And furthermore, D learns too, because E also sends out, as a result of that update, information to E, and that happens, and I guess then the timeout occurs and other things happen as well. So we start out in a state where not everybody knows everything, and then when the initial timeouts occur, what everybody knows about their neighbors propagates, and eventually we end up with the ability to do this. Now, let's see. So then, there are some, and you'll be doing this same thing with yours, so this will not be different. sorry. Probably should have a second window, but we'll just go ahead with this. I may need a second then. Slash chain. Oh, so now the project to git. Again, I tell it that we're doing the CTI example, and let me say I want to change the AE link to have cost 64. Okay? And as soon as I did that, a whole bunch of things happened, because that information propagated quickly throughout the network. And now, so AE is now broken. We just have a long chain, A, B, C, D, E, no loop back. Okay? But everybody can still reach each other along the chain. Now let's see what happens when I... I can't see anymore what I'm doing here.
Is the recording not going anymore?
Pardon?
Is the recording not going?
It's going.
Oh, it stopped.
It looks like it stopped. Did I hit it?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. All right, well, I don't know at what point it stopped, but...
What are the units of measurement
in timeout? A second since the start of the universe, probably.
Oh, okay.
What's important is that you see that they are really happening every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That's the reason I put them in there, because that's another thing you have to do with select is do a timeout. And if you do that wrong, they won't actually happen every 10 seconds. So.
All right, so now we're going to try this. Again, we're going to do CD64.
Is it from the start of, like, Unix time?
Yes.
No, it's first in
78 or something. Okay, so what I did now was, in this
project, we're going to call 64 infinity. Okay. So 64 means it's disconnected. That's what they usually do, is just pick a big number and say that's infinity. And so I changed those two links to 60, and now fork is disconnected, right? A, B, and C are connected, and D and E are connected, but those are two separate clusters, and they can't talk to each other. And notice what's happening. Here's our count to infinity problem.
I made that change. There were gazillions of messages sent back and forth, and you see the numbers going up, 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 until eventually all of them reach, all of the ones that are separated from each other reach 64, and there's no route, none. Okay? And now it's stable once again. And, oh, well, it's partly it's stable because I told it couldn't update anymore. Okay. All right. So now, let's do one other thing. Let's change this back to 1. Boom. It computes all the new routes very quickly, because this time the cost went down. So when the cost goes up, it may take a long time to converge. When the cost goes down, it converges very quickly. Now everybody can presumably talk to each other again. Okay? So that's what you're building. There are 5 processes running here. There are bigger networks as well, I think, that you'll need to support. But... this is a pretty good one because it's pretty simple, and yet it shows interesting behavior. So now, kill. Make all those go away. More jobs. here's a project. All right. So some people asked last time about what could you use, and I think I said to the whole class, C, C++, C#, Java, Python. If you want to use something else and it's reasonable, talk to me first. I just need to make sure that the TA and I can cope. Anybody have any other thoughts about what they might want to use?
Can we use Swift?
Swift?
Okay.
You'd have to teach us how to drive it. I don't know how to drive Swift, so. Yes, sir.
Go.
Yeah, go. Go would be okay. However, there is one important caveat to this. You may not use threads. You must do it using select, because that's the point, is to learn how select works. Even if you were using threads, in fact, under the covers, you would likely be using select. The library or language implementer would have done all the work for you, and so then you don't learn anything. So must use that. Okay, so I decided that based on experience last time of people coming in and telling me that they had been trying lots of things and it wasn't working now, it had been working better before. I'm looking at certain people. It had been working better before, that I'm going to give you a little bit stronger nudge toward using Git for this project by insisting that you actually obtain the project files from the GitHub server. Insisting that you actually use Git, but I'm strongly suggesting it. It's a complicated project. It's easy to take something that you thought was almost working, make a change to improve it a little bit, and find out it's totally broken, and then wonder how do you go back to where it was almost working. So, are certain people recognizing themselves in this story? I hope so. Okay, so you're going to get the project files from there. In that directory, you will find a collection of Python programs, this changelink program that I was using to send messages to cause the cost of links to change. There's a command in there to change the table, to print the tables, send a command to the routers to print their routing tables. And there's a bunch of different networks defined. They're named test 1, test 2, test 4, and CTI, count to infinity. Okay, so there are four networks in there. And there's a Python module for reading those network descriptions, which may be helpful in actually seeing what the format of those is. I've also sort of described it here. Okay, what are you going to turn in? You're going to turn in instructions on how to create your router from source and run it on the supply test cases. So those of you using Swift, you may have to tell us, like, how do I install Swift, since it's not usually installed, or Go. I could handle the other ones. A make file or the equivalent that actually produces your executables from source. A write-up about your experience, about how your program works. Some output from the test cases. It's just sort of raw output. And of course the program code files. And once again, don't send me the crap from IDEs and stuff. I just want the source code. Okay. Thank you. So each of the test cases contains, is in a directory. It has a file for each router that makes up the test case. It has a file called routers that has some global information that all the routers need. And then it has this thing called net.config, which your program is not going to read. Okay, that's used. That net.config file is used by another program that's also in the upper directory to generate these other ones. All right, so what do these look like? Exciting. This is router A's configuration file. It says it has a link to B that costs 7 and a link to E that costs 1. Right. And the other ones are similar. Right. And then the routers file contains a line for each of the routers, giving the router's name, the host name on which it's to be run, and localhost, and it will, they're all generated to just run on localhost, but you could change these and run them on different things if you wanted to. A port number for it to receive commands. So commands are things like change a link cost, print a routing table. Once, and a port on which it will be receiving the update messages from its neighbors. Okay? So these are the two ports that have to be that you'll have to be managing when selecting each router. Notice that all the port numbers have to be different. Okay? You understand why? They're all running on the same machine. They're owned by different processes. You can't have two processes. Well, you can, but it would not make sense in this assignment to have two processes that were trying to deal with the same port. Okay, questions about that? Pretty straightforward. This is a new iteration on this project. I've changed some things from what I've done in previous years. So it is unfortunately likely that there are items that are not as clear as they should be, or maybe even mistakes. And here I just see one. if you see mistakes, let me know. I will update it. So the files are in a zip file. There's no zip file. You're getting files from Git, so that's what it's named. So you invoke your program just like I did in the example. So if you want to go back and look at the video and see how I invoked it in the example, the router program name, the test directory, which is test 1, test 2, test 4, Git, CPI, and then the router name, which is ABCD, etc. Looks like that. Infinity is 64. I said that. Okay, so routers process several different kinds of messages. They process messages, so-called U messages, U standing for update, that consists of a destination router name, single letter, and a cost. Some decimal number less than 64 for as many of those as there are. That's an update message. And so your router, when it gets one of those, has to parse that, update the distance vector for which neighbor? Which neighbor's distance vector gets updated in response to this? Just says, here's an update message, here's some costs, which router's distance vector is being updated? I covered this at the beginning of class.
the one whose port sent this message. Right? That was the whole idea of received from. Is received from when you get this message. If you receive from this message, there will be additional information that says which port was it. And then you can look at the information you got from that router's file and say which router was it. See, I made it hard. I could have put that information in this message, but by not putting it there, I make you use receive from. I want you to learn about receive from. So, sorry, I am being nasty, but that's how that works. Okay, link cost changes. Capital L, the name of a neighbor, and the new cost of reaching that neighbor. Okay, and so when that happens, you have to update your routing table, because if the cost went up, then maybe there's better ways to get to all the things that you went to from that neighbor before. If the cost went down, then maybe that neighbor becomes viable as a route to a whole bunch of other places. So you have to check that. Okay? So you do the updates and then some send some updates. Okay? Now,
as you saw, I didn't use quite the same format as specified here.
But as you saw, when those messages were received and the routing tables changed, the routers print a message on standard output. Okay, that helps us know what's going on. Helps you know what's going on. Does this make sense? You have to make sense. And in addition, we're going to print out the times when the timeouts occur. And as I said, the trick there is to make sure that the timeouts are really occurring every 10 seconds and not some other strange time, because it's easy to get that messed up. We'll talk about how select goes up, right?
Okay. One more command message, the P message.
When a router receives a P message, it may be just P all by itself, which means print all of your print your entire routing table, and or it may be PB, which just says print your routing table entry for a single destination.
Datagram sockets, we talked about that. Question?
No.
No. All right. Command ports and update ports. Select. We're going to talk about select next time. This protocol that we're using here, this distance vector protocol, is actually very close to what is called RIP, the routing information protocol, that's been around for essentially forever. Notice the number of the RFC that describes it. 1058, that's really pretty close to the numbers of TCP and IP and UDP themselves, right? So those low-numbered RFCs are sort of foundational RFCs that describe the way the Internet works. And so 1058 is print tables, change link. So forth. Okay.
Grading, you can read about that. The comments file is an essential part of this assignment. You're going to essentially be writing up a lab experiment. So if you're familiar with writing up lab experiments from physics or biology or something, it sort of has that flavor. I'm not going to be sort of rigorous in the way that the biology TAs are rigorous about the format of lab reports, but that's the essential idea. You're describing the problem, you're describing the solution, you're checking to make sure that the timeouts are occurring properly, and you're running each of the four test cases. Now, don't include all of the outputs from the four test cases here. I want you to interpret that output and tell me what the data means. We'll put the data itself in a different file.
Okay, so you can play around with it yourself and have some fun with it. Maybe it doesn't work quite the way I've described distance vector, or the book has described distance vector. Let us know about that. Is it realistic? What's simplifying, etc. Okay, so as I said, it's a new version of the write-up. I'm well over time, and once again, you're very patient with me. So on Friday, we will talk about how to use select. And also how to use receipt from. Thank you for your patience.
I do. Do it. You want, we can even work on
Yeah.
Home the kids.